I would say the more time you can spend, and as I advise businesses and I work with founders, I'm constantly reminding them that getting back sort of to their roots is a great grounding experience, because it reminds you time and again that you're there to serve your customer. And if you are not in touch with your customer, you've lost your way on the journey.
Welcome back to the Business Side of Fitness podcast. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. Each week on the show, we learn from movers and shakers behind some of the most well-known and innovative brands in our industry. The time has come to start the show. Everyone's got a story, and now it's time to hear from this week's guest. Let's welcome to the show Judy Turchin. She's the founder of JPT Partners LLC, a global advisory firm, and the former COO of Equinox. Welcome to the show, Judy.
Thanks, Vanessa. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'd love to just kick off this conversation with you sharing a bit about your background for the audience, because you have a very eclectic background. I don't think many people have such a diverse background. So I'd love for you to just share your backstory before we dive in.
Yeah, eclectic. I like that. I'm going to put that into the list of vocabulary words I've heard described to my background. Yes, unlikely to end up in fitness is probably the background. You mentioned I am currently the founder of my own advisory business, working with founders and private equity and the like, helping to scale and build businesses. But rewind the tape a bit, I started my career as a lawyer working in what is like a very traditional law firm, commercial real estate, did that for a number of years, switched to private equity, still on the legal side, and spent, you know, gosh, a lot of years, north of 10 years in the real estate private equity business, working for Lehman Brothers, a name that some of your listeners may know, but it no longer exists. And then Blackstone, which some of your listeners also may know. And then making my way to Equinox most recently as the chief operating officer for approximately 4 years.
And what was your biggest takeaway from your experience at Equinox?
Gosh, there's so many. So I'm considered what we consider a career changer, right? Of a very strong degree, right? Going from real estate and private equity and law to fit probably the sharpest right or left one could make. I would say my biggest takeaway is, well, there's probably two. I would say one is the knowledge that running a business like that with 105 locations, 14,000 employees, it is really a tough business to run. And hats off to any of your listeners who are themselves trying to run what I'll call a retail business. It takes a lot. The hours are long. The work is hard. I would say the flip side to what I learned is super hard to run a business like that. The other side is that it's also so incredibly rewarding. The humans that you come in contact with, the people, the mission, the vision, all of that is hard to find in a lot of other places, particularly like double click into that fitness, right? Those that are operating fitness or wellness or lifestyle businesses, they're doing so probably out of pure passion. And so just the fact that it's like-minded people working together, that was really both surprising and so, so incredibly rewarding to me.
I can definitely relate to that since I've been in the industry for over 20 years. And I think that's what keeps me coming back. Although what you said about it being such a hard business, and I think, you know, it really rings true. And I think one of the biggest challenges is just managing people. Like you said, that could be like one of the best parts of the business, yeah, because you're working with so many amazing, inspiring people that motivate you, that like get you to continue to level up. But then managing people can be really hard. It's not as, you know, reading about it in a textbook or reading about it, you know, in a news article is one thing, but actually the practice of managing people is completely different. So what tips would you give to the audience about if somebody's in a leadership position, how to approach management?
I would say, start with authenticity. Like I would say, be vulnerable enough to like explain to your team why you're there and like what your mission and purpose of being there is. Like, I think people respond to that sort of intrinsically, which is that you're kind of sharing your story, your why, and then others kind of follow suit. And I think when you have that trust and respect, the difficult conversations become easier to have, and the more rewarding sort of celebratory conversations become more fun. It sort of just heightens the experience of both, right? But it starts with being a very authentic leader, which is owning your mistakes, recognizing when you're like way outside your zone of knowledge, leaning in where you have to, where you sort of do have that unique skill set. And all of that comes from just, I think, being humble. And truthfully, like, I agree with you. It is the best part of being a leader, in my opinion. And I know not everyone shares that opinion, but I would say in my entire career, the most rewarding thing that I've done in all different lines of business, right? Like vastly different law, private equity, fitness, is the human aspect and the people that I've met and had the opportunity to work with, mentor, be mentored by along the way. Like, hands down, it's what makes going to work every day so fun.
I feel like the value of mentorship can sometimes be undervalued, but I think there's something so important, but like learning from other people that have been where you want to be. Sometimes it's a mentor can even just be a couple steps ahead of you. And there's nothing more rewarding than taking somebody under your wing, showing them the ropes, and then seeing where they end up and seeing where, you know, where they go from there. Cause I think about people that I've worked with from like, you know, over the course of time, and it's feels so good to see them shining now. I don't think everybody has that look on things though. Sometimes when people leave organizations, it can be complicated. So Judy, right now, consumer experience is a hot topic. And I'd love to hear from your expertise, what separates an outstanding customer experience from an okay one?
Yeah, I would say it starts, and this is going to sound simple, but it's far from simple, is really knowing your customer and being able to understand who your customer is. And that comes with a lot of, you know, a lot of nuances to it. But I would say that's the difference, is I think the customer has come to expect that they will be seen as unique by the brand or product with whom they're engaging, right? And so what may work for me, Vanessa, will not work for you and vice versa, although it may. But so understanding where they are, meeting them where they're at, and then taking them on a journey. I think the journey part is also really important. And so there's a personalized aspect, and then there's a journey aspect. And that journey is sort of the art of the possible, right? I think particularly coming out of COVID, I think we're all sort of craving, you know, some semblance of like return to normalcy. But sometimes that can be in the form of just taking people kind of away from their day-to-day lives and kind of bringing them, you know, with a product or with a brand on a journey. And so I think those two things, if you can do those two things well, and then the third that I'll add is customer service. I think we've all also come to expect that customer service is really going to be where we can win or lose customers. I think if you have those three things at sort of its simplest, you win, and then adding on to that. But that's sort of the recipe if you have to like sort of boil it down to its essence.
How can organizations measure their success criteria for customer experiences?
I mean, look, there's different ways. One is, you know, in a fitness industry, it's retention, right? It's not sales. It's, are you retaining the people that you've spent so much time, money, and effort winning over? So I would say there's retention. There's, you know, NPS, net promoter scores are sort of numerical ways of doing that. I would say more important than all of those is if you're running a business or part of the business, is being really close to your customer and consumer. In the fitness industry, that can mean spending time in a location that you're owning or operating. So you're hearing on the ground feedback. I always found it incredibly both rewarding and interesting to spend time in a club with both the employees at Equinox and the members. I would learn an immeasurable amount by simply being on a listening and learning tour. And what you learn in that allows you really to refine and improve every aspect of both the customer experience as well as the employee experience. And those are hand in hand. I think anyone who doubts that is missing the mark in the retail space. Happy customers make for happy, you know, happy employees make for happy customers. No doubt.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And that's such a good point, Judy, to actually get in the trenches, get your feet on the ground, to actually go through the customer experience yourself and be the eyes and ears out there. Because I think that sometimes a lot of organizations think, oh, I'm going to periodically send a quarterly survey and we're going to get all the feedback that we need. And those only take you so far. So how often would you recommend that an organization assess this feedback and recalibrate their customer journey?
And look, again, it depends. I would say, I this is personal. I would say certainly in the beginning, spending more time boots on the ground rather than less is always going to be additive. We used to say at Equinox that the best ideas came literally from the field teams, right? From the clubs, from the members there. I would say the more time you can spend, and as I advise businesses and I work with founders, I'm constantly reminding them that getting back sort of to their roots is a great grounding experience because it reminds you time and again that you're there to serve your customer. And if you are not in touch with your customer, you've lost your way on the journey. So like, you know, there's no prescription of like, do you go once a week? Do you go once a month? I think it's a constant touch base, depending on the type of industry, that keeps you grounded in why you're doing what you're doing and for whom.
When you're evaluating a client marketing strategy, what are the first things you review?
Sorry, say the question again. When I'm evaluating, you cut out a little bit. A client?
A client's marketing strategy. What are the first things you review?
Such a good question. You know, you come at it very, it depends how far along it is. If you're building one, you know, the first step is to really understand who your customer consumer is and what's the problem or issue that you're trying to solve. I would say that's early stage. If you're coming into a business that's sort of in a transitional stage, it's really respecting what have they done right and where is the opportunity to sort of move them off into their own. We talk about a category of one a lot. That's really what each brand is trying to do. It's trying to distance themselves from the pack, differentiate themselves. And so I'll look and sort of say, like, if I'm the customer, and I really try and do this, it's important. I like to work with brands where I am, in fact, the customer. It makes it so much easier to say, like, what is it that this brand makes me feel and think and want? Is it inspirational? Is it aspirational? Are we trying to be accessible? And really taking myself on that journey. It's the first thing I do when I interact with a brand is however I'm going to interact with them, if they're a mostly online or brick and mortar. So to spend time and from there, you begin to understand what the marketing strategy. I think looking at a lot of like pretty pictures on a page is not a great way to begin. I think it's immersing yourself in the brand as a customer and then backing up into the full journey to then give them a point of view around how to think about differentiating themselves.
That makes so much sense because I think when you're in it, it's so hard to take an objective look at the journey, and especially when you're like, for me, if I've created the marketing strategy, if I've created the journey, sometimes like I'm emotionally invested in it. And so I don't see it objectively. So it's always so great to have another person's perspective to spot all the little areas of opportunity. Okay, like this was great. Let's change this and make it even better. But when you're in the thing, it's really hard to see.
But I think the fact that you said like emotionally invested, I think is really important. I think every brand ideally has people working on the brand that are emotionally invested in it, because as a consumer, just think about it. Like, I feel like that comes across to you as like people who are working on the brand, who love the brand, who are bringing the brand to life in a way that feels very authentic because they themselves are a consumer of that brand. I think there is no substitute for that. Otherwise, like, and it's why, you know, people balance the, you know, do you bring in an agency? Do you do it in-house? I think part of it is just that DNA is so important. Nothing against agencies. We've used them and I've used them a lot and love them. I just think it needs to be a hybrid of like big thinking from an agency and like DNA that is emotionally connected to the brand.
Right. And that circles back to what we were discussing earlier with managing people. When you're looking for people to add to teams, it's like you want those people that are like brand fanatics that really appreciate what the company has to offer and the unique value proposition. Because at the end of the day, you need everybody to believe in what you're offering. I think that the best employees, the best team members are always the ones that like are the biggest brand evangelists and really believe in the product as opposed to just looking for a job.
Right. But I would also tell you that like, I think because I was the beneficiary of this, like that doesn't always mean that you have to find people in that industry. Like, if you look at me, right, as a career changer, like I was an evangelist of the brand and yet wholly an outsider by all accounts, right? Other than having been a member for 15 years of Equinox, like I wasn't in the industry. And so I think sometimes it's fun to get people who love the brands, but who truly are not in it, who, to your point, can bring a unique perspective that maybe someone in that industry, you know, isn't able to, not for anything other than they've just been doing that for a while.
Right. And just hearing you speak, even though there are different industries that you've been involved in, there's a common denominator between look, the way that you approach a marketing strategy, the way you approach leadership, regardless of the industry, yes. Right? The product might be different, but the heart and core of the approach to business is the same. Looking at the customer journey, seeing how the product relates to the customer.
Judy. Yeah, I agree with you, by the way. I think that's a super important, you know, distinction for your listeners as well. Like I like to say I'm asset class agnostic, meaning like I will work on a brand. Everyone thinks, oh, fitness. Absolutely not. I sit on a board of a marina company. I sit on a board of a medical aesthetics company. I sit on a board of a healthcare company. Like all of those are vastly different asset classes, but the through line is my expertise and what I bring to those in terms of the customer and thinking about a go-to-market strategy and all of that. So I think people need to be less concerned about, are you in the asset class that you are in versus what is your particular expertise and how do you think about that across different types of asset classes?
And not only that, but you can borrow best practices from other 100%. Industries.
Yes. Yes. 1000%. Hospitality is an industry that if you have a background in will serve you well, I think, across the board. For example, it's just one, but it's one that keeps popping up for me a lot.
Judy, you've been in so many high-powered positions. How do you deal with, you know, being a mom and all of these, you know, demanding roles that you play where people are really looking at you for leadership, direction, organization? How do you balance it all?
Yeah. So I certainly didn't coin the phrase, but I use work-life integration versus work-life balance. I don't think there is balance. You know, I hate to sort of be the one to say that to your listeners. I think it's work-life integration means that at any point in time, either work or life needs to take priority. And I think if you can accept that as the truth and work within those confines and then work for an organization that also respects that you're a grown-up, that you're going to prioritize what needs to get done, but that you're not going to, you know, put FaceTime in and be micromanaged. I think those are the two keys for me that I found. And what I've also found, yeah, so I'm a mother of two boys. Both of them are teenagers. It was hard. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It was super hard, you know, getting pregnant, having babies, working full time, like all of that is super hard. I think part of the key is really playing the long game, which is I knew that I wanted to be sitting here, you know, now still working. And so the question was like, how do you navigate that journey? And it's giving yourself a little grace and freedom to sort of know that you may not be at the top of the game, you know, when you have a newborn and you might need a little room and you might need some flex schedule or some part-time or whatever it is to get through certain chapters of your life, but knowing that you're committed to the journey as a whole. And then I would say, you know, a little bit of luck. Honestly, I you know, they say the harder you work, the luckier you get. I don't know. Sometimes it's just pure luck, I would say. So I got to where I am in part from great mentors and people and companies, and also being really sure with myself that like at the end of the day, I wanted to have a career that I really loved and was proud of and that my kids, you know, could be proud of me for.
I love that. I also have two teenage boys and it's something that I always struggle with. You know, the balance is the enemy.
It doesn't end, right? I mean, I think this is where I sort of say when they're younger, but right, if you're applying a teenager to college, it becomes an immersive experience. If you were sending them off to college, you know, like each time has its own difficulties. And I think finding other, you know, other moms or dads who are going through it, like there's also a support network. Like you're not alone. I think people have come a long way in talking about it. When I first began my career, it was a while ago, like it was really not spoken about. I feel like there's now so much more opportunity for women, men, caregivers, whomever, to talk about how difficult it is what they need in order to like allow for that, while at the same time being career oriented.
To me, that's like the biggest blessing from COVID. I feel like before I kind of not hid the fact that I had a family and that I was a mom, but it wasn't, I feel like it wasn't viewed as a positive. Whereas like then there was a lot of grace extended to people when people's kids were running in the back of Zoom calls and whatnot. And I think that's a huge positive. And instead of, you know, I used to feel a lot of guilt of, oh, I have to, you know, guilty about the kids, guilty about missing a work function or whatnot. And instead, now you can own it. And I feel like COVID gave a lot of people that permission. And it's really nice to see.
Yeah, I would say guilt is a topic that I deal a lot with young women that I'm mentoring. Like they just, and we all face it. And I think it's like, it's one of those like dirty little secrets. Like, do we talk about it? Do we not talk about it? Like, I think it's okay to normalize guilt. Like it, we all feel it. And the question is like, what are you going to do with it? Like I had a young woman that I was working with, really bright up and coming young woman. And she was building, you know, starting her family. And one day she, you know, I was on the phone with her. It was during COVID. She's like, I got to go. I got to, you know, go to the grocery store and I got to go find ingredients to make a cake. I said, who are you making? Oh, my husband's birthday is tomorrow. I feel really guilty. I haven't done anything. I'm going to go. And it was already like 9 or 10 o'clock and we still had to turn a document. And I said, you're going to go to the grocery store right now and bake a cake when like you have a newborn, so you should be sleeping or working. Like, she's like, yeah. I'm like, no, we're not going to do this. You are not going to go bake a cake at 9 or 10 o'clock at night. You are going to go to the store and you're going to buy a beautiful cake and you're going to give it graciously to your husband for his birthday with candles and all the love. And that is the equivalent. And that's the grace that you're going to give yourself. And so we jokingly said, like she coined the term, she's like, all right, you need to write a book about this. And the book is going to be entitled buy the fucking cheesecake, buy the damn cheesecake, because it's really that simple. Like go buy the cheesecake. You don't have to make everything to be the hero in the story.
I think a lot of like women in business, it's like, they're almost waiting for permission to not be all things to all people, right? Yeah. Whether that's home and work. So Judy, tell me, in 2021, you launched your own business. Why was that the right time?
I guess time will tell if it was the right time. It was the right time for me. You know, I had taken a step back from Equinox. COVID was really tough for the entire industry. I do not own, you know, how difficult it was. I think all of us sort of came out of COVID and needed a reset. For me, it was the opportunity to take what is, you know, 25 plus years of experience and really see if I could be smart enough to crystallize that into advice for others that would result in a very differentiated outcome for them from a business perspective. So for me, it was just a challenge to sort of say, like, you've worked for all these people, some of the best in the world, honestly, like, prove to yourself that you've learned enough that you can now pass on those learnings to others, whether it be founders or private equity or companies. Prove that you've done that, you know, that you can discern and sort of synthesize that into advice. And so it was as much a challenge as it was an opportunity, to be honest with you.
Well, I give you a lot of credit because it's very scary to step out into the unknown, even though you have the pedigree, you have the background, you have the wherewithal. It's still scary. And what's the accomplishment that you're most proud of since starting your own business?
Yeah, I'd say the accomplishment I'm most proud of is just reminding myself that like, I can hustle. Like it is a hustle out there. I'm sure for many of your listeners, like that word resonates. Like, you have to go back to being humble and gracious and appreciative. And like, it reminds you that when people send you an email, like you respond, right? Even if you don't have business to give them or you don't have anything to like provide them. I think that like, I've learned that it comes full circle, that like humility and trust and appreciation of people and like what they're trying to do. Everyone's on their own journey, like no matter where they are. Yes, I have 30 years of experience and like, to your point, have I been at great? Yes, I've been at all those great organizations, but I still reach out to people and say, like, would you like to use my services? And so it's sort of taking that hustle and that humility and like being reborn again in sort of a unique way that I've never had before. I've always been attached to really prestigious organizations and I've benefited from that. Now I got to like show up on my own.
Oh my God, but it's got to make you feel alive because you're like, hey, I'm doing the thing.
Yeah. Well, look, I guess I, you know, I'm always one. I always say to brands and founders and people, I say, I think a good way to start is write your press release. Like, what would the press, like when you're successful and you put a press release out to announce your success, like write that press release and then work your way backwards, because then you know the goal that you're trying to achieve. And so, you know, I would say to you, once my press release is, I've written it, once my press release is published, I'll let you know that I was successful.
Ah, I love it. So Judy, you're working across all of these different verticals. And I feel like obviously everybody wants that crystal ball of what's next, you know, what's the future of wellness or the future of fitness. But I think there's sometimes there's foreshadowing from other industries. For example, Uber came about way before fitness on demand came out, right? So are you seeing any trends or any opportunities out there that might indicate what's next for us in fitness and wellness?
Look, you know, I don't know that this is a trend as much as it is a necessity, which is I really do think that we've come out of COVID with a huge realization that, you know, our health is really of prime importance. And I think whereas fitness might have been seen as a vanity sport, whereas wellness might have been seen as fluffy, like it all now ladders into ultimate health, right? Like real health, right? Like, you know, health as in like health outcomes that allow you to live a longer, healthier life. And so I sort of foreshadow that everything will begin to sort of make its way to that ultimate goal, right? That it's not for vanity and it's not for fun, but it's really to ultimately allow for longer lives, people living longer lives, but living them healthier and stronger. And so I foresee a world where health, fitness, and, you know, healthcare, fitness, and wellness really do converge into sort of one, sort of hopefully one outcome. And that has nothing to do with the rest of the world. There's sort of, you know, double clicks of that, I would say, in sort of where, how I see that happening. But I think that's the overall trend is sort of meeting those three where they, you know, where they are and then sort of trying to merge them.
I agree with you. I think there's a huge opportunity for consolidation. Like right now, consumers are going one place to, you know, measure their Ready score and their steps and their whole thing. And then one place to activate their, you know, to work out and have fit the fitness experience go somewhere else to recover. I feel like there's a lot of and healthcare is like completely over all the way on the left, like not connected at all.
Don't get nutrition. Like, the biggest component of all of this is what we're putting in our bodies and eating, which happens way off to the side, right? Like you're putting in your Instacart order, your Amazon Whole Foods order. Like none of that is even linked to what are the health outcomes that you're trying to achieve? Like how do you eat to, right? Like we sort of know how you work out to do that. But I think one of the big, you know, hopefully one of the big things that needs to happen is just sort of that nutritional component of what we're doing every day begins to make its way into the programmatic element of how we're trying to make our bodies stronger and healthier.
Right. And I think what's problematic right now is the messaging to consumers. It's really around nutrition is really centered around dieting, guilt, shame, yeah. You know, like you have to be so extreme in order to experience health or success. That's only for, you know, either you're, you know, almost diabetic or you've got 6-pack abs and there's nothing in the middle.
Yeah, no. Right. And I think, look, I get surprised. It's funny, my youngest son came home the other day and he said to me, "Mom, we're in school and there's a health class and they're teaching us about nutrition." And I was like, okay, this I have to see. Like I was really, so I'm waiting. So I unfortunately, the, you know, I'll have to keep all your listeners and yourself on, you know, on the edge of your seats. I don't know, but I'm very curious to see because it starts at this age. Like it starts at the age of like teenage boys and girls and like, what are you putting in your body? How does it feel? How does it make you feel? So I agree. It has less to do with whether you have a 6-pack and more to do with like, how are you nourishing your body? How are you keeping it going? How are you helping, you know, with your awake times, your sleep times? Like how is nutrition feeding into that? Such a big opportunity for us as a country to continue to like have that conversation, particularly with our young people who I think need it more than ever.
Amen. I totally agree with that. So Judy, if somebody wants to connect with you, they want to learn more about working with JPT Partners, how can they do that?
Sure. So you can reach out to me, firstname.lastname@gmail, judy.turchin@gmail. I'm on LinkedIn under the same handle. I'm on Instagram. I go by my name. So I'm pretty easy to find. So I hope some of your listeners will reach out and just even give me feedback about how they thought today's podcast went.
Thanks so much, Judy.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. Thanks for tuning into this episode. If it brought you value, please subscribe, review, and share the Business Side of Fitness podcast. If you'd like to learn more about working with me, please click the link in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you on the next episode.